You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I'm Steve Dotto and I'm glad you are joining us this fine Thursday evening. Art Factor, how are you today, sir?
I'm a little freaked out that it's already November.
Yeah.
Christmas season, practically.
Now, are you going to join the Movember revolution?
I've done Movember a couple times. I think it's weaned. I'm done with it.
It's not a good look on you, I wouldn't think.
No. There are pictures of me out there doing a show out at Laugh Lines, and one guy said that I couldn't look any more Filipino if Manny Pacquiao was on my shoulders.
Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. It has been a tumultuous week in the high-tech world. Our friends at BlackBerry have they're going crazy.
Yeah, well, the new CEO, right? He's in there.
Well, we've got John Chen taking over as CEO now from Thorson. And but the way that it's just these things are just suddenly coming out of the blue, it has all the hallmarks of a company that's circling the drain and just kind of completely out of control. Having said that, Chen has a pedigree.
Yes,
he's got a real pedigree. We're taking companies that were basically on the brink of extinction with Sybase and turning around. But that was 10 years ago. And the world is a different world today. And, and BlackBerry is a different animal. If he brings these guys back, it will be a turnaround of Jobsian proportions. It's going to require that kind of leadership, I think.
I think the big thing, and everyone said it, the big thing about BlackBerry and the reason why people held on to BlackBerry for so long was because of security. But obviously companies and the tech departments, more importantly, of these companies are saying that, you know what, we're okay with what Apple can do. You can get your iPhone. You don't have to have a BlackBerry.
Well, I think you're wrong. I don't think that the IT departments are saying that. I think the IT departments are kind of saying, whatever.
Right.
That's the, they're kind of going, okay, fine, whatever, because they can't do anything about it. It's like, whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Because the
users want the coolness of the BlackBerry of Android. They want that functionality. They want that, they want those capabilities. And bottom line is, we know the BlackBerry handset is dead. It's what is BlackBerry going to look like in a year, 2 years? What is the company going to look like? Can he convert them into a services company? Can he get somebody else to pick up the operating system? But to compete with Samsung, with Apple, with Nokia now, with all of these other handset manufacturers, I don't think BlackBerry has a snowball's chance in that space. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll give him a couple of weeks and we'll see what he has to say. Now, I do have a question for you, Mr. Factor.
Okay.
What do you know about SEO?
I know that that people who have mastered it and make a lot of money, because everyone wants more hits. Everyone wants more exposure for their websites, for their YouTube, for anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I still don't know. I have never been behind the curtain to figure out how to optimize my search engine.
I think you will be surprised by what SEO really is. I don't think I know most of the world does not know. But we have a guest coming up a little bit later in the show, Ross Dunn, who does know. Now, Ross is going to fill us in on SEO 101.
Perfect.
It has all the hallmarks of being really boring, but it won't be, because Ross and I will make sure it's interesting and we kind of put it into perspective. It's something worth understanding and worth knowing about.
Absolutely. Well, as a comedian and with the videos out there of mine and as a podcaster too, I would like more people
to watch your stuff.
To watch my stuff, to listen to my stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, do you remember a Canadian comedy troupe called The Frantics?
No, I do
with
not.
With Mr. Canoehead?
Definitely not.
Okay. They're pretty popular in Toronto.
Okay.
Paul Chatto was one of the founders and one of the original member of the original troupe. And he has a new Kickstarter project that we're going to talk. We got Paul queued up and he's going to be on with us in just a few seconds. He's putting on a webisodic TV show, basically,
mm-hmm.
which is sounds to me like it's going to be hilarious. I love the concept. And he's raising the money on Kickstarter. And he's just started the campaign a week ago. So we're going to be able to talk about it. We're going to be able to talk to Paul, find out about his program and about the Kickstarter side of raising money for a project like this.
So for a few bucks, I could become like a producer, like an assistant,
yes,
or associate producer?
Yes, actually, you can get an executive producer thing.
Ooh.
It's really funny. All of the you can pay for a walk-on role on the thing if you want. You know, it's a good way, you know, if I think you have enough chops that you might even be able to get on the show for real, but you'd have to get out to Toronto because their budget isn't going to allow it to be shot in multiple locations. But it is a funny, funny concept. It feels very uniquely Canadian. And Paul is he's a long time. Paul is from my generation, but he's a rock solid. For 2 years, he was the director of comedy programming at CBC. He's got some serious pedigree. We're going to be talking to Paul Chatto. And so also, finally, wrapping things up, Paul DeMera is going to come in because I want to talk about LED lighting. Over the next couple of weeks, I want to do a couple of green-type stories talking about becoming a little bit more environmentally conscious as we move into the holiday season.
Yes.
I had a disturbing event happen to me this week. I went to Costco, and I bought some LED lights, which got me thinking about getting Paul on. And there was more packaging in those lights. So all of the environmental good that I was doing by plugging these lights in was completely destroyed by this inordinate amount of packaging that the folks at the big box store had put in place, which drove me crazy. I mean, a single bulb in a huge cardboard container, a single bulb. Now, the price was good, and I bought them, but now I've got a stack of cardboard that I got to deal with. It's just redonkulous.
You can recycle them into ornaments for your tree.
No, you can't.
You could try.
It would be ugly ornaments for your tree.
You could try.
You could try. You could try, and you would fail. Let's hope that Kickstarter is going to lead to some success for Paul Chatto. We're going to have him on as soon as we return.
Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Dottotech is brought to you in part by Dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now from the center of the universe, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, is Paul Chatto. Now, Paul is a longtime legend in Canadian comedy, one of the original Frantics, and he has also been on this show regularly as talking to us about web stuff. He's kind of like me, kind of one of those multi-purpose guys that deals with technology, deals a little bit in the entertainment space. And Paul, you have a project that is moving ahead, which is a little bit in the technology space, but a lot in the entertainment space. Tell me about Goonie.
Well, I do have to just want to say that, yes, I am a multi-purpose guy, just like a Swiss Army knife. And unfortunately, certain appendages are no bigger than the corkscrew. So.
Well, let's not talk about your hands.
Goonie, okay. So this is a project that is the culmination of a whole bunch of creative forces coalescing into one product. So, I mean, as a comedy guy and a writer and a creative person, you're always doing stuff. And you know, Steve, you're writing books and ideas. It can't stop. And sometimes every bit of experience that you have, pulls together and you end up with this thing. And in this case, my thing is Goonie, which stands for Global Universal Networkers International. So what's that? Well, for those of you out there who are members of, what do you call them? Networking clubs? Networking groups, thank you.
Networking groups, yeah.
Yeah, and there's many different kinds out there first of all, you'll find, you know, the idea of making fun of a networking group pretty funny just on its own.
Yeah, because they're full of stereotypes.
Well, and what's wonderful about them is that these are all people who are trying to drive and improve their business, and they have various levels of skill, right?
Yes.
I mean, some people are good salespeople, some people are shy, it's just really wonderful. But the one thing that unifies all of them is that they're driven to succeed or hope to succeed through this networking group, and comedy doesn't find them, they find the comedy.
Mm-hmm. So what you've done, though, is I think we should fast forward a little bit to what the project is you folks are starting a web-delivered comedy series based on the Goonie, based on this networking group, which you are funding through a Kickstarter campaign, which brings
just put everything I like except fly fishing into one single project. You've got technology. You've got making fun of people. You've got the networking side, and then you've got the technology side dealing with Kickstarter as a way of launching it, as well as you're going to be delivering it online. What a cool setup!
And not just that, but the audience really is what I call the LinkedIn dreamers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the regular broadcast audience. But you and I are online all the time. You and I both consume news and also entertainment online.
Absolutely.
And this, so I don't know what's bigger than a trifecta, but you're absolutely right.
The fourfecta.
The fourfecta. The fivefecta.
Okay.
And it's for people who are comfortable online and consuming webisodic kind of material, but it's also about them.
Mm-hmm.
And not just that, but we get to use also the latest digital technology to record it. So, you know, when I started in video many years ago, a Betacam camera was $75,000, and the quality of the video coming from a Canon T4i is a million times better and is, you know, what is it, $1,000?
Yeah, and you can edit it on your Mac. You don't have a full editing suite, and you've got
nonlinear. Just,
you've got. I mean, all of the technology has certainly democratized the entire production of video. But what compelled me was the subject matter. You know, taking on, and it's going to be a little bit sensitive for some of our listeners, because I know a lot of people take these networking groups very seriously, and they're intense and they're erstwhile, and you go to these meetings, and to me, I kind of sit back, and occasionally I kind of snicker a little bit, because I see the same sorts of things happening over and over again. And I have to admit, I'm a bit of a voyeur in the networking space. I go when it suits me, and I don't really vest too much in my own personal growth and business in them. But I do enjoy the networking and the chance to get together with local people, because typically in our business we deal so often nationally that having business contacts locally is a challenge. So going to these groups and seeing the realtors, the mortgage brokers, there's always a fitness guy, there's always a nutrition person, there's like five or six coaches. The coaches are coaching each other, the business coaches. I get such a kick out of a coach telling me that they hired this coach. And they're almost a caricature in of themselves. And you're going to take that and just celebrate that with Goonie.
Well, yes. And some of our exactly. And, you know, some of our characters, we've got Terry Avalon, who's from TNA Interior Design. And,
yeah.
And his elevator speech is, if you hire a straight person to decorate your home, then you don't know Dick. We've got Tamara Fisher, who's from OmniConscience Homeopathy, and her pitch is, we'll treat you in ways that we're pretty sure work.
Mm-hmm.
Mohammed Ibrahim is a immigrant from Pakistan, and he runs Moe's Computer Tech, and his pitch is, if you want a trained nuclear physicist who can't get a job in your country to fix your computer, then I'm your man.
And these elevator pitches, you're catching the culture.
Yes.
Of these networking groups, because they all work on that pitch, and they'll actually sit there and brainstorm
how they
can, you know, two or three sentences that allows them to deliver their message to compel somebody right away.
So you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, for those people who don't know what a networking group is, that's really just our background characters. The main thrust of the show is about a guy, Edgar Sturges, who worked in a multinational company that went bankrupt, and after a year of therapy and HR coaching and value coaching and self awareness coaching, all that stuff.
Not to mention the exit interview and all of those other things that happen. Yes.
So he's broke. His wife divorced him because she was used to a certain lifestyle that he can no longer afford.
Mm-hmm.
He pays alimony to her, and the joke is that he's so broke that the show starts every show starts with him in his ex-wife's storage room. So she's letting him sleep there. So you can't get any much lower than that. So it's the story of Edgar Sturges, a guy who was, had a great life as a middle manager in a multinational, and now his only recourse is to become an entrepreneur, or try to become an entrepreneur, and start his own business. So And Goonie, the local Goonie Profiteers chapter, is where he goes to try to kickstart his experience. And speaking of kickstart, I am using Kickstarter to try to raise the money to shoot all 9 episodes, which are already written. So, yeah, this is an incredibly circular, digital, modern story.
And you've done the show itself, I think, is going to be funny. And you've got you've already started casting it, correct?
Correct.
Now, do you have most of your key characters, or just the few that we see in the video?
Well, I mean, actually, we have more than what's in the video.
Yes.
But we've stopped until we get funding. There's no point in raising people's hopes and tell them, no, you can't be in this wonderful project.
And you've already had to put an awful lot into it. I mean, the promo video is funny as can be if you're into this stuff. I mean, looking at the founder of this Goonie group, he's just you lucked out with it. Now, is this guy, how did you find the actor there?
I can't say anything.
Okay,
about
you can't
him.
Say anything? Oh,
no, you're not the deal that I have with him is that he's supposed to remain a complete mystery until he decides that he doesn't want to.
Well, he's funny as heck in the video.
Oh, isn't he good?
Oh, it's hilarious. And so talk to me, just you're in the very early stages, and we're gonna bring you back maybe towards the end. Probably you're going to need a little bit of a push to get you over the hump. Hopefully you won't need a bit of a push, but you might. But talk to me about the process of setting up the Kickstarter campaign and what your expectations were going into launching it and building it, and what it took for you, the resources that you had to put into it versus what you expected.
Well, it's nerve-wracking in the sense that one of the key components of Kickstarter is the video. So we have literally shot myself saying similar stuff that you see in the existing video on the Goonie Kickstarter pitch 4 times. And each one was more embarrassing and cringeworthy than the next. It's really difficult being yourself and also making things concise and exciting at the same time. Because at a party, you can throw out the pitch and have someone go, oh, tell me more. And then a half an hour later, you're telling them script lines and episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can't do that on a Kickstarter video. And I have found that they're way too long, and they get into information that is not relevant. And
yes.
So we just wanted to see, can we make a 5-minute tops Kickstarter video that describes enough of what this project is about to whet people's imagination? So that's number one, is that's the greatest anxiety driving component of the Kickstarter. I mean,
it was
setting it up.
It was working on your elevator pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
The video elevator pitch and who's it directed towards and what kind of graphic do we need off the top? And Kickstarter, the people are fantastic, and the videos that they've got are very inspiring. I mean, they've done just a brilliant job in creating this environment for you to.
So you've got, so you, there was some really good help and
oh,
some
terrific.
Really good, some really good resources within the Kickstarter environment to help you move along. And
yeah, their attitude is just fantastic. But I mean, it's kind of scary in that, you know, we're dealing with kind of a mature, clever topic. There's an awful lot of video games, ninja, vampire, kind of genre stuff, which we're not. We're an adult comedy that's trying to make fun of what's happening out in the business world right now.
And so removing yourself from the noise and all of the other competitors is one thing. Was it a big decision as far as deciding on budget? Because I imagine there was probably two sides of the conversation. This is what you're going for. Because what do you need to actually make the project happen? And then a part of your voice had to be saying, what can we actually reasonably expect to raise? Because if you don't raise 100% of what you're looking for with Kickstarter, you don't get a nickel. So what was that internal dialogue like?
Well, I mean, we were comparing Indiegogo with Kickstarter for exactly that reason, because Indiegogo has one option that costs you more in terms of interest that they take, that you keep whatever it is that you've raised.
Yeah.
But we went Kickstarter because we think it has a better North American wide brand and will get us out to a wider range of people if we're lucky. Now, let me just backtrack. That being said, not answering your question, but answering another question previously. I don't think anyone goes to any crowdsourced funded experience without knowing what kind of internal network they have. If someone is asking for $500, then sure, go on one of these crowdsourced funded services and see if you can attract the people who are surfing the system. But we're looking for $50,000, which is outside of the Kickstarter sweet spot. They say the sweet spot is between $100 and $10,000.
Okay.
So and that doesn't mean that, you know, there aren't people who have, you know, there are famous instances where people asked for $20,000 and they got $200,000.
Yes.
But those are for few and far between, and you know, everyone can hope, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're right. I mean, we actually will need more than $50,000 to shoot this the way we want to do it, but we were afraid to ask more than that, quite frankly. Okay. I'm not Zach Brampf.
Yes.
I'm only, you know, Mr. Canoehead. not everybody knows Mr. Canoehead.
So the campaign is a month long total from start to finish?
They recommend that, again, they've got these fantastic tools and statistics that because they've done this for so long now, since 2005, 2006, I think, that they said that a campaign that's 60 days makes less money than a campaign that's 30.
Okay, so it creates a sense of urgency.
Correct.
So your campaign started a week ago today. You're 24 days into it, and you have 21 backers so far, and you're sitting at just under $2,000. Mm-hmm. But I imagine that it's pretty. That's really not an important number right now. What's important now is what sort of momentum are you building? How are you getting it out there, and how are people discovering your project other than things like this radio show?
Well, I have more than 1,000 number one connections on LinkedIn. So mm-hmm. I sent a note of my first barrage
mm-hmm.
Through there. I have got I've approached the Frantics fans mm-hmm. and told them about the project, and that's a considerable number. Through Facebook. So I'm working all those avenues. Another statistic that you might like to know, they said the most successful campaigns, people have more than 1,000 Facebook friends.
Oh, okay.
I'm at about 300 or something, which
I need to
rush.
I don't know how many I have. I think I'm over 1,000.
Oh, you are? Okay.
I'll share it for you. and the thing that really is going to be interesting when you look back, if you can figure it out, is if you reach a tipping point where things accelerate dramatically, what caused that and what causes that? I'm sure that's the magic that that all Kickstarter campaigns are searching for. But the thing that I love about this crowdsourcing idea is so far you've got 21 backers. I don't know how many of those will be super active, but they're all 21 cheerleaders for you now. They've all committed money. They feel like they're a part of the project. So they want it to succeed now. And that's the beauty of crowdfunding, is now you've got these new avenues of proselytization. I can't say it. But you've got these people that are going to go out there.
Prostitution. I think you
meant prostitution. No, I didn't mean prostitution. That's what you're doing. It's a difference.
That's right. You're right.
But you've got this new avenue, this new group of people that is out there promoting your product for you. And there has to be some sort of a magic number there, or a magic moment when that group suddenly becomes where momentum is generated.
Well, I really think this is the future on many levels. You can get passive people. For instance, there was Snakes on Planes. There was that whole story where a whole bunch of people were asked what they want to see in a movie, and they went, Snakes on Planes. Who do you want to see in it? Samuel Jackson. So they put it all together, and nobody went to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So in this particular case, as you've said, people have put their money down. Now I've got a group of cheerleaders, and if this becomes a successful campaign, I can now go back to all of them and tell them, now the show is on. Please watch it on yep. YouTube. And so now I have a built-in audience to kickstart my YouTube channel. So I love this new era. I'm a network guy. I was head of TV comedy at CBC for 2 years, and I was down in LA. And, you know, people have to understand that, not so much now, but back then, the power that the executives got,
the programmers,
were it wasn't about the fact that they had taste or not taste. It was the fact that they had 24 hours in a day to work with.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. So, yeah. And then in those 24 hours, they only had 3 hours of prime time. So between four networks, that's only 12 hours and billions of dollars spent on just a few shows. So now the hour quotient is gone. You go on YouTube. I watched The Guild with Felicia Day. I binge watched four of them a day. I just love this whole new paradigm.
Yes. And it's going to be really interesting to see how you do it. Now, where can people go? We will definitely have links on the site and we'll put it in the newsletter, but where can people go if just to remember it online to head out and take a look at your project?
Well, you can go to goonieshow.com.
G-U-N-I.
Yeah, G-U-N-I-show.com.
Okay.
Or go to Kickstarter and just search G-U-N-I.
Yeah, Goonie. It'll be easy to remember. And Goonie, once again, stands for the Global...
Universal Networkers International.
And you know what's going to happen, Paul? Is there's going to be a real Goonie group grow out of this?
I think so. I'm hoping that we actually have real fake pamphlets and guides and rule books and stickers and business cards. I really envision this becoming a parallel universe of silly business fun.
Goonie, you can back it on Kickstarter. You can take a look at the video. Paul Chato is my friend. He is the creator of it, and he's pouring his life's energy into this project. Paul,
even $5.
you've got the whole list here, so we will go through as little as $5 all the way up to $5,000. I love the fact how you say you can be an executive producer, and there's no limit because executive producers basically do nothing.
That's correct.
I love that. Paul, thanks so much for coming on, and good luck with the project. We'll check in with you in about 24 days.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now from Victoria, BC, is Ross Dunn. Now, Ross and I met a couple of weeks ago at Social Media Camp in Victoria, and Ross is an acknowledged expert on something called SEO, or Search Engine Optimization. You've probably heard the term. It probably makes your eyes sort of roll back in your head because you probably don't understand it. Don't worry, you're not alone. A substantial portion of the world, and I think a substantial portion of the people in the SEO space, don't understand what it is. But I wanted to take the opportunity to get Ross on the show to talk a little bit about it, because in essence, SEO is how we make our content that we put online, how we tag it so that it can be found, and how we find that content. And it all relates back to how the search engines work, and which is really kind of the juice in the engine that drives the internet community. So Ross, first of all, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you coming and joining me on the show today.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. I've seen your show for many years, and listened to it, so it's,
oh, good.
It's great to be on.
Now, but it is a challenge that I'm asking you to do, and that's to kind of, and I don't want to say dumb down, because that's not what I want to do, but to kind of boil back the, you know, kind of peel back the layers of mystery surrounding SEO and explaining to, especially like to the small business person or the person just, you know, kind of that has a website or does some things online, understand and has heard that they have to optimize their website or they have to optimize their content for SEO, and really just, you know, they not their head and say, yes, I understand I have to do that, and then but they really have absolutely no idea of what is expected. So SEO is basically, is it nothing more than just formatting your information so that especially Google can find it?
Yeah, well, it's more like what I call SEO. Search engine optimization is the process of formatting your site so that when Google finds it, because they do find it, they find everything, they understand what it's about.
Okay.
And not only just what it's about, what you want them to know it's about.
Okay. So, and this, and I think if you're approaching it with the proper spirit, it's not about driving a whole bunch of traffic to your site. It's about driving the right traffic to your site. And that's exactly really what you're saying, is making sure that Google understands what the message is that you want to put forward.
Precisely. Yeah. So, for example, and when we get down to this, we get down to the little bit of the nitty-gritty, and that is, what keyword is someone searching for when they're looking for what you want to sell. It could be you've just got information on your website, like a blog. It could be that you're selling a product or you're selling a service. What you need to do is make sure that whatever people are searching for, you know your target market. You approximately know what they're searching for, or you think you do. This is part of the process of learning your market. Whatever they're searching for, you want to be found in the top rankings for within search.
So a big part of this has nothing to do with the technology that we're talking about. It has to do with the language, how we describe what we do. And it's almost a business exercise as opposed to a technical exercise.
Yes, very much so. And in fact, it's so much that, you know, we get clients coming to us and saying, okay, what do I do? Well, we're going to listen to you and we're going to guide you. Mm-hmm. Because the fact is, they know their business far better than we ever will. But obviously, you know, everyone's so overwhelmed, they just want us to do it for them. And we can only do so much, but we just guide them. And we ask them, you know, what is it that your clients are looking for? What were they looking for before they found you? Mm-hmm. And a great way to find out is to ask them, you know, what would they search for now to find your service? And what were they searching for then? And you get a really good understanding of what your market's looking for and where you need to be in Google search results.
Mm. So, is this about playing defense and just protecting your market, or is this about growing your market?
Well, I guess it depends what you mean by that. Are you talking about growing your own business market or our market as a whole?
Well, kind of what, you know, I mean, I would think that, you know, back in the day, if, you know, business was based on location primarily, you know, certainly retail and all those sorts of things were based on location, and you kind of had a catchment area that you expected to capture a substantial percentage of that business within that area. So if you were a shoe vendor and you had a shop on Granville Street in Vancouver, you expected a certain amount of traffic based on where you were. But that's not the case anymore. Where you are online is nowhere except for how you represent yourself online. So, you know, getting your fair share of business as opposed to moving the ball farther downfield and really accelerating your business. Is there a kind of a different strategy or a different way we look at that?
Well, it's certainly wide open online. Okay. That's part of the beauty of it. I mean, if you want to, you could certainly, for example, if you are a shrew salesman and you are doing fairly well for visibility, okay, I'm trying not to use too many of those jargon words,
yeah.
You're found in search and you know that you're found in the right places. And let's say you've got a decent amount of business, but perhaps you got one of those machines that allow you to provide insoles for people's shoes.
Okay.
Well, you could easily create a new portion of your website about that product and write the content so that Google understands what it's about. And there's a good chance you're going to be found for that. And then, yes, you can expand your market and expand your offering and how much money you're bringing into your business.
So the process of building your online presence is about finding additional content that supports what people are going to be looking for, what they're interested in your area. I guess it really is. It's as simple as that, but by itself makes it incredibly complicated.
Yeah, unfortunately, it can be looked at both ways. You're right. And I liken it to an example recently where we were given a little heck because we couldn't be found under Victoria, BC SEO. We thought, oh, fine. So all we did is we created a page about Victoria, BC SEO and said, this is where we are located. We're proud to be here. We're search engine optimizers, or SEOs, and we'd love for you to come and visit. That page is now ranking well under Victoria, BC SEO.
Okay.
It can be that simple.
I just looked up Victoria, BC SEO. And so by ranking well, what do you mean?
Okay, so ranking well, for my opinion, is just to get a top five, minimum top 10 ranking for that phrase. Now,
okay,
one thing that's very important that I have to preface is wherever you are located, the results change.
Ah.
Yes, and your personal search habits. So where you like to search, what kind of websites you've been to. For example, if you had been to one of my competitors before, they're likely to show up better than I will if you're doing a search again. Google is trying to hone their search results to give you a better, what they think is a better experience in search. That's where rankings can be very deceiving.
Mm-hmm.
You look at what you look at isn't necessarily what everyone else is seeing.
This is where the confusion, I think, for so many businesses, this is where their eyes start to roll back in their heads, is there are so many variables, and it's so difficult to measure real success in these areas, isn't it? I mean, it's both an opportunity for you, but it's also it's an opportunity for you to explain things, but it's also got to be one of your biggest challenges is kind of calming the waters as people kind of work their way through it.
Oh, you have no idea. Yeah, it's a lot of work. And when you think about what the answer is, that gets people even more scared. And the answer is, and it's a scary word, analytics. Mm. You need to know who is coming to your website. And that's the one thing at least Google does give you some info on. If you, and I try not to get detailed here, but if you add that particular capability to your website, it's fairly simplistic, and but any webmaster or anyone who is running your website or helping you operate it can do in minutes. But it allows you to see who's coming to your website and what they're doing there. And that will give you some perspective on what is working and what isn't when you're doing marketing.
Now, the whole process, though, is it sounds to me like the technical side really has to take second fiddle to understanding your business. If you've got a good narrative, yes. If I can sit down with you and tell you chapter and verse the value that I bring to my marketplace and what my customers are looking for, I have to be an ideal client for you.
Yes.
Okay. And yes. But I bet you a very small percentage of businesses come in with that. With that clarity,
I'd say 5% over a whole year.
And so you're almost you guys should, you know, SEO should almost not be called. It should not almost have that technical aspect to it. You guys should almost be looked at as, or at least from your perspective, the way that you run your business, you're not so much a technical service as you are a coaching service. You've got to talk them through their business model, getting them building that narrative, and those are finally the tools that you can take and you can start to apply into the online space.
Exactly. Oftentimes we are doing a lot of that, and it's I enjoy it a lot, fortunately.
I can't tell you how disappointed I am with this. I was hoping for some easy technical solution that I just, you know, this is the field I'm not clicking in here. So click in that field and put this word in, and you're laughing, and that's not the case, unfortunately.
That used to be the way.
Yes, but
that was. It's so drastically changed, and it's unfortunately it was a lot easier for me to explain this simply, but Google has made it more complicated.
And not only has Google made it more complicated, but I think that even though Google is still the 800-pound gorilla, search for your website is now just a portion of your online presence. Your mm-hmm. Facebook page, especially now, is becoming so much more important about creating traffic and creating engagement with your user base.
Yes, and that was actually a good reason for our big change. I think it was 2008 or 2009, we changed from being just an SEO company to be a web marketing company, because it was very obvious what was happening. SEO was taking a back seat. I mean, it's still very important, but it's only a small component of everything that has to be done. And I shouldn't say has to be done. Every business has different niches they fit better in. And the worst thing you can do is try to take it all on.
Yes.
And that's part of what we help them with too. We try and narrow it down and make it like, okay, this is what you need to do. Don't worry about all this other stuff. If you get distracted, you're going to end up spreading yourself too thin.
Well, you know, and I couldn't agree with you more. You know, kind of just taking on one thing at a time is the most important, because if not, you're going to be chasing your tail. But I think that, you know, I think that we've gotten what I wanted to get out of this chat right now, which is I think an awesome bit of advice for all the people out there who are confused about SEO, is you can just take that SEO confusion and park it. The only thing you have to worry about that as far as moving your enterprise forward is understanding your market, understanding your service, and understanding your customers. If you concentrate on learning that and building a story around that, you can take that story and it becomes plug and play into all of the different online offerings. It's very easy then to start to leverage it. But until you have that story, no amount of SEO, no amount of consulting is going to help you.
Yeah, you'll find you're scattered. And as a result, the kind of people that are hitting your website won't be the type that will convert, or very few of them will. Whereas if you'd spent the time knowing exactly what your market is, you may get less traffic, but they're going to be converting more. So it's well worth your time.
Ross, where do people find you?
I'm at stepforth.com, stepforth.com, or marketinghigh.com. And that's a place we have actually created for small businesses to affordably get our support.
Yeah, you've got a whole new service that's coming online about that. A whole new, it's almost like a community that you're building around it, is, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah. We really want to help small business. And a lot of them, frankly, understandably, don't have the money to hire a business regularly, full time, to do this kind of support. So MarketingHigh, that's HIGH.com, is the place where we're hoping to do that. And it's just $50 a year. So we're hoping that that's going to be alluring enough that people can at least get the help they need. And they're not going to get shystered. There are so many SEO companies that don't know what they're doing. It is horrible.
Well, you do know what you're doing. You also do a weekly podcast. What's the name of your podcast?
It's called SEO 101. Yes. On webmasterradio.fm.
Yeah, and so if you really want to get into the deep end of the pool, that's the place to go. But here's what we'll do. We're going to leave it here for now, but we'll get you on back in next month sometime, and we'll talk about that online service that you've got as far as for consulting and for basically, you know, just providing that marketing information for smaller businesses, because I know you're rapidly building it out and filling up the content. So in about a month, it'll probably be ready for us to have a good chat about.
Yeah, it'd be great. Thank you very much.
Good stuff. Ross Dunn, thank you so much for your time, sir.
Excellent. It was a wonderful honor. Thank you.
Okay.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Joining me in studio now, Paul DeMera, who has been absent far too long. Although you were back here a couple of weeks ago, spending most of the summer.
It's all good.
In the Okanagan. How are you keeping, Paul?
Ducky, as I always say.
Ducky,
which is my little term for being happy.
Oh, it's yeah. Yeah,
it's nobody's heard it before, so they like it, right?
Everybody's heard the term
I guess
ducky.
So. I guess
we're
so.
Just ducky. I don't know. I don't know what the genesis
really well.
Of it. Good. That's good to hear. The reason I invited you on is Paul is a man of eclectic interests, as anybody who listens to this show knows, along with analog audio, which we're not going to let him talk about today, and along with telephony, which we're not going to let him talk about today, although we might talk BlackBerry a little bit at the end. You also have taken on a personal project, which I find fascinating, and it got me thinking the other day. You took... And correct me if I'm wrong, but you went through your entire house.
Yes.
And you replaced every single bulb, light bulb, in the house with an LED light.
Save one.
Which one didn't you do?
The stove. I can't get a glass. Did. I've got no glass bulb for the stove.
Oh, you couldn't do the
no,
stove?
No, I couldn't do it.
Does that drive you crazy?
Well, one day I'll find one for it, I'm sure.
You're still looking, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So, but you've gone through the house, and you have replaced every single bulb. And that, you did this a year and a bit ago?
2 years.
Two years now. And so when you did it, it had to be an expensive venture, because the bulbs were not cheap back then.
They weren't, and they're still not, you know, super cheap. It cost me $3,000, but... I worked with the BC Hydro engineer because I'd sent them in a letter and said, this is what I'm doing. They actually put a really good article on their website about it, which is kind of cool. And they went through my numbers and they basically said, three and a half years, you should get your money back and start making money. And that doesn't include the cost of actually replacing bulbs. Like I was spending $30 to $50 a month just on regular halogen bulbs. Got all these pot lights, right? And
yeah,
one little bump
burn
and
out
they,
so fast.
They don't last a year. No way, man.
Oh, no. And then it's also the hassle climbing up and down.
Yeah.
I've got these lights up in our kitchen that I have to climb up on a step ladder every time I want to change them.
I hate changing bulbs, man. Yeah, I really do.
It
I hate
sucks.
It sucks.
So anyways, what got me thinking was this past week I was on a shopping expedition. There were replacement bulbs for my kitchen, and they were only like $6. There was some sort
That's
of a
awesome
rebate
price.
Program.
That's an awesome
yeah,
price.
Yeah, they were $6 with and there was about $4 worth of packaging in them, as I was saying off the top of the show. I don't know. These big box retailers and this stupid packaging. When are they going to get their heads together and
what
figure out a way
bulk,
around it?
Right? It's crazy. You're right. It's just crazy.
You
look at
all
the stuff.
All six bulbs could have fit in a tiny little package.
Yeah.
And but anyway, so now and it takes anyway. So I've got all these, and I've put them in, and it's kind of exciting for me because I put these in. I replaced these six bulbs, and I know I'm never going to do it again. Not while we're in the house.
It's 20 to 25 years, roughly, if not longer.
That's awesome.
You won't have to change light bulbs.
But the cost of the bulbs, of the other bulbs, was probably $2.60 or $2.70 each.
Sure.
And I would change them at least twice a year.
Sure.
Maybe three times a year. And so it was just great to do it. And it got me thinking about what the options are and how much it really costs. Because I think most of us, when we look at it, we see the expensive bulbs when they're not on special.
Right.
And so we just back away because we're saying, you know, $19 for a light bulb.
That's
no
a lot.
Way.
Yeah, not going to happen.
Not
right?
going to do that. And some of them are that expensive. So there are programs that are in place. Now, are we in the middle of one of such rebate programs?
I was just double checking on the BC Hydro website, and I couldn't find the end date. Now, normally, I believe it goes till the middle of November. It starts in early October, and they have October's Power Smart Month. So it's appliances and LED bulbs. And the way it works at the retailers like Home Depot and London Drugs is that you go there and you see the price of the bulb, and then they have a little thing that says it's going to be this discount, and you get that right away at the till. So it's an instant rebate, so you don't have to send anything in. Everybody hates that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Right, we don't want to do that. So you get a discount on the bulb itself, but even so, I've seen the prices drop significantly. Like you can get bulbs now, and you're saying under $10. That's pretty reasonable when you consider where we were just a couple of years ago. I mean, a lot of the bulbs I was buying were $30 to $40, and they had a $15 rebate. So it sounded great, but still $15. So, it's gotten a lot less expensive. And it's no different than any other technology. That's what happens in the world as more of it becomes available, right? So that's a good thing. It means it's much more, cost effective to do this.
Did you embark on a process of changing your bulbs over a period of time, or did you blitz? Did you take good light bulbs, pull them out of their sockets before their time, and replace them, or did you wait until...
It gets better. I have a bag of my old bulbs, some odd 100-plus bulbs, sitting in a bag in my closet in case I move.
Are you serious?
I bring my light bulbs with me, man.
Are you serious?
I do. I have all my old bulbs, and I've kept them.
Over 100 light bulbs. There's over 100 light bulbs in your house?
I had 124 I started with. That's where I was at when I first...
Is that average?
I don't think so. I have a lot of...
It sounds like a lot.
Little lights all over the place. I like lights from multiple sources, right? And I have a lot of pot lights. And yeah, I like light bulbs. And I mean, I just like light coming from a bunch of different places. So I find it more pleasing, right? Like little small lights around a room rather than one great big huge one in the middle. That's just how I like lighting. But
so
yeah.
When you started on this project 2 years ago, BC Hydro said that within 3 years you would recognize a break-even point,
return
on your investment. Have you been tracking it?
Yes.
And where are we?
We're accelerated. I'm probably going to be into it about 2.5 to 2.75 years because my previous power bill was typically $130 a month. My bill last month, including taxes, was less than $50. It was $45, and I'm on tier one. I'm way below the tier one level, so. I'm using very little power compared to what I was doing. Now, I did a little bit more than just the bulbs. I did a power audit, too. So I went through the house and looked for things that were bad, that were using up too much power. Some things in your house that are left on 24 hours a day can be real power hogs. So,
such as?
PVRs. I had a couple of computers. I had a server running and a server for files. Those two boxes alone were like 300 to 400 watts, depending on what they were doing, whether they were virus checking. Well, you run that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 4 weeks a month, and it starts to really add up. That represented like 23% of my power bill 1 month, just those two boxes, right? So you got to look for this stuff. Like anything that's high wattage, like if you had a heated floor, for instance, and you left it on 24 hours a day, and it's 300 or 400 watts, doesn't sound like a lot, but over 24 hours and 31 days, it gets up there. So to answer your early question, I kind of started and then I just kept going. I just kept going. I couldn't stop. Help myself.
So how long did it take you from start to finish?
I spent probably 3 to 4 weeks doing it because one of the things I learned about was bulbs have different characteristics. So, they have a different color. Some of them are more softer brown color, like kind of light we'd see from a 60-watt bulb. And some are whiter, like halogen bulbs, nice white light for that. And some of them are more like daylight. Well, I didn't put any daylight type bulbs in my house because that's like an office environment. I'm not interested in that. So the two temperatures I chose were 2700, which is like a 60 watt bulb, and then 3000 degrees Kelvin, which is like a really good quality halogen bulb that you spend a lot of money on.
Okay.
And those two temperatures look the best. They make stuff look nice and white, or they make it nice and soft in a room so it's not hard on your eyes.
Okay. And so the color of the bulbs, and it's easy. So in all of the LED bulbs that you look at will tell you what the color temperature is.
If they're decent quality, they'll tell you. I mean, I've seen a few bulbs that are really cheap and they don't really say anything. Just say cool white or warm white. Any bulb of reasonable repute will tell you, you know, it's 2,700 or 3,000. So that's, you know, very helpful. There's another thing called the CRI, color rendering index, and that also tells you how good the light looks. It's not just the color of it, it's how nice it looks. So you want a high CRI if you can get it.
Okay.
Over 90.
And of course, and haven't even had time to chat about the fun stuff, which is getting, you cut, because you splurged and bought yourself a couple of the Philips Hues
yes.
that you can actually tune.
Awesome. You use your iPhone or your iPad and you or other device and you remote control them and you can change the color of them. And there's 16.7 million colors that you can choose from. So it's basically unlimited and you can make them be any color you want them to be in a light socket. And they're wireless. It's really cool.
It's awesome. So I, the message that I kind of wanted to get out is people at the tail end of the PowerSmart month is to think about replacing your bulbs with these LEDs. If 2 years ago, 3 years ago, yeah, you know, we use you as an example. A 3-year payback period for putting them in as far as cash in your pocket. But that also means you're a far more environmentally responsible consumer
yes.
over that period of time. The prices have dropped by at least 50% in the past 2 years.
Yep.
So we're looking at now kind of a return on investment of probably a year to a year and a half for most people
yep.
on every bulb that we put in. And you don't have to do them all.
No. In fact, the best strategy is when a bulb burns out, just replace it with one rather than go out and spend a lot of money. I mean, if you can, great. But it's much more cost effective just one or two at a time, like what you just did with six, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't hate your strategy. And I've still got six of the other bulbs. Because I actually thought, depending on when we move, of what you were saying is that if we move, I'm going to replace those six bulbs with six of the others. If the new place has that fixture,
right?
Because you know, it's a fairly decent investment.
You're taking the appliances, you're taking the light bulbs, right?
That's true. Oh, Paul, thanks so much for
welcome.
Thanks for
inviting me.
We didn't even get a chance to talk about the debacle at BlackBerry.
Another day for sure.
And Art, I think that brings us to a close of today's festivities.
It really does.
Good.
I've enjoyed it.
Well, as you should have. We had a little bit of everything. Had a little SEO, had a little comedy, had a little light. It was an eclectic show.
It was a veritable cornucopia of technology.
Ah, veritable cornucopia, one of the best turns of phrase on the planet.
Thank you.
That's just a ducky phrase.
Ducky, there you go.
There we go.
Right around full circle.
With that, I thank everybody for tuning in. We will see you next week. Next week we're going to be doing, we got App Wednesday on Thursday.
Oh, really?
It'll be App Wednesday on Thursday next week. I believe so, yes. No, it's not. We're gonna push it off to later. It's 2 weeks from now.
It's a great idea.
Next week, we'll just do a regular show. Sorry, Art, to get you all excited. That's all the time we have for this week. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week right here on Dottotech.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.